Well, this is a story that begins in Europe in the 1500s. It's a story about a priest in a small country church. And this particular priest was a cat lover. The priest's cat roamed the church at will, which was usually not a bad thing because it kept the church free of pests. The only problem came when it was time for worship. Then the cat, who was used to having the run of the place, would jump up on the worshiper's laps and would trip up the liturgist on the way to the lectern, or would often decide to nap on the communion table. The priest tried shutting the cat in the sacristy during the service, but the cat howled so piteously that it just disrupted the service. And finally, the priest took to putting a rope around the cat's neck and leashing it to the altar to keep it from getting in the way. And the priest did this every Sunday until the day he died. And thereafter, one of the members of the altar guild was assigned the weekly task of catching the cat and tying it in its appropriate place. And this continued until the cat finally died. But by the following Sunday, the people had gotten another cat, and they had dutifully leashed it to the altar during worship. 500 years later, the practice continues. The church is on their 60th cat, which is always present for worship. Now, nobody in the church really remembers the theological or liturgical reason why they have to have a cat tied to the altar during worship, but they all agreed there must be a reason, and the members of the congregation are all committed to preserving this most treasured part of the church's worship life. Of course, that didn't happen. I was actually told this story by one of my seminary professors, and I think his point was obvious. If we're not careful, worship can be a kind of rote exercise. Worship can become kind of a collection of things we do for some reason because we've always done them. There's been a debate going on in churches for some time about worship styles, about more modern, contemporary versus traditional styles of worship. I think each one of them has a lot to recommend it, but I don't think the kind of worship that we do really is the issue. What matters is that our worship be grounded in our theology and in the stories of our faith. Worship, however we do it, has got to both serve and amplify the longing that we have to be connected with the God who breathed life into us. Now, I think it's true to say that there is a lot of theater involved in worship that's done well. And by that, I don't mean that we're engaged in presenting something that's fake here. But think about a well-acted and produced play. It tells a compelling story. Every word has a meaning. Every gesture and glance of every actor is intended to convey something important, something that enriches the experience and enriches our understanding of what's going on. And we strive to make this true of our worship as well. But for that to be the case, we need a shared basis of knowledge about what it is we're doing and why. So this is all by way of introducing to you what is going to happen in a few minutes. I am going to walk among you, sprinkling you with water using an evergreen branch. Now, I tell you this both to prepare you and to promise, I hope it isn't an exact science, but I hope it's just a sprinkle. And I also tell you because if what I'm going to do has any meaning whatsoever, you need to know what I'm doing and why. A shared understanding of the meaning is necessary. And I think we can understand the importance of context if we imagine together someone in church for the very first time witnessing something like this. Well, first they sang and prayed. And then some guy in a robe wearing a scarf covered with magical symbols threw water at people using what was left of his Christmas tree. And all the time he was telling them to remember something called a baptism and saying that if they got wet, just be thankful about it. It's a ritual that sounds a little bit absurd, and it really is if we don't know the story. And the story of what we are doing today, more than anything else, is the story that defines who we are. If you boil it all down, it's ultimately what everything we do in here on Sunday is about. Underneath all the hymns and the robes and the symbols and the beautiful music and the sort of specialized vocabulary we have in here, what we are trying to do in here is define who we are. We're here to ask and hopefully get an answer to the simple question, who am I? What does my being here mean, really? And that question is perhaps never more powerfully present than on Sundays like this one, when we remember together the meaning of baptism. Now, being asked to remember our baptism sounds a little odd to some of us. That's because most of us were baptized as infants. That's what we do in the United Methodist Church. So we literally can't remember what happened at our baptisms. But what lies beneath the literal instruction to remember your baptism is an invitation to reflect on what your baptism means. It's an invitation to think about who and whose you are. And that is a reason to be thankful. Today we acted out Matthew's version of the story of Jesus' baptism. Jesus arrives at the Jordan River to be baptized by John, and if Jesus brought with him any doubts whatsoever about his essential identity, he didn't wait long for an answer, did he? As soon as he's baptized, he comes up out of the water, and the heavens are open, and the voice of God is heard to say, "This is my Son, whom I love. In him I am well pleased." And what our baptisms mean is very simple, too. See, God invites us into the waters of baptism, and everything that God said to Jesus, God says to us, too. What our baptisms mean is that if Jesus is declared to be God's beloved child, then so are we. And if Jesus is the beloved, so are we. And if God is well pleased with Jesus, he is pleased with us. To be baptized means to be loved and cherished by God just as Jesus was. And you know, I think we need to take every advantage, every chance we have to be reminded of that. Often I think it's hard for us to really believe it. Most of you have probably seen a PBS television show called The Antiques Roadshow. It's been on forever. Some of you may even have gone to some of them. This show goes all over the country, and at each place they go, the producers assemble a group of experts in things like fine art and jewelry and antique furniture. And hundreds of people come with all kinds of personal belongings. They come with everything from old trains to furnitures, to posters, old piggy banks, and they wait in line for hours for the chance to have an expert assign a value to what they have. And my point in bringing this up is that for most of us, I think life is a little bit like the Antiques Roadshow. We start at a very early age wondering about ourselves. Am I good enough? Am I skinny enough? Am I smart enough? Am I good enough at sports? Later in life, it may be, am I capable enough? Am I successful enough? Am I worthy of friendship, of respect? Am I worthy of being loved? And sadly, I think in our doubts, we usually kind of do the Antiques Roadshow thing. Uncertain and anxious about our own value, we let the experts, by the experts I mean other people, assign us one. And just like the experts on the Antiques Roadshow, the other people just love to tell us what they think we're worth. Remembering our baptism means reconnecting with a fundamental truth. The opinions of the experts about us don't matter, because God has already made that determination. See, our value, our infinite value, was fixed in the waters of our baptism as they enveloped us, as they touched the crown of our heads. Our sacred and limitless value was established in that moment when God whispered to each of us, "You are my beloved child." Now understand that baptism is totally God's work. I stand up here and say some words and put water on the child's head and a little oil. But that isn't baptism. Baptism is what God is doing. There is nothing that we can do or we can fail to do that will change the identity that God has given us in baptism. Our relationship with God is the one relationship in our lives that we can do nothing to end, because we did nothing to begin it. And we can neglect this relationship, we can deny it, we can run away from it, we can ignore it. But the good news that we celebrate today is that no choice we can ever make will ever cancel out God's choice to love us. So in a few minutes, we will join together in a service of baptismal renewal. And at the end, as I said, I will walk among you, sprinkle you with water, and say, remember your baptism and be thankful. The water is a physical reminder. And as I do that, as droplets of water touch you, reflect on what your baptism means to you. Perhaps it's something you haven't thought much about. And if that's the case, maybe today is an opportunity for you. Maybe today is a chance for you to accept the grace God gave you long ago, whether you wanted it or not, whether you even knew it or not. Maybe it's a chance to recommit yourself to a life that honors and reflects the deepest truth about who and whose you are. Amen.